This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Today, Congressman Peter DeFazio with us back in the district this week. And Congressman, I understand you had an interesting experience in the past couple of hours.
Yeah, I got to drive a Volvo electric truck. It can haul 80,000 pounds. It's not their long-range semi, but it can go about 170 miles on a charge. They'll use it for deliveries within the state and in cities. It was an incredible experience. It's the future. Now we've got to build out the charging network for the coming electric vehicles all across the country, which will be part of my major infrastructure bill.
Now, I understand you are at a company in Coburg. Do they sell those there, or what's their connection with these Volvo class trucks?
The dealer sells them and services them. They're actually built in Virginia. They're built in the United States. So they're made in America.
And versus a typical semi truck, what was the differences? What did you see?
Well, when you turn it on, you don't hear the boom and the boom, 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 boom. So there's no noise. In fact, they said, "Gee, we've got to change the signal light because we made it loud enough to hear over a diesel engine, and it's very irritating in here because it's so quiet." They're very smooth. It has a two-speed automatic transmission, shifts around 25 miles an hour. They've got a lot of power, a lot of torque, because it's an electric engine. So they can accelerate quite quickly, brake regeneratively, and they're just amazing. And this is the future. We can both deal with climate change and and have better vehicles on the road.
And this is all as well, or the emphasis on it, a part of the American Jobs Plan.
That's correct. My bill is going to electrify the national highway network, both for passenger vehicles, light trucks, and for heavy trucks across the country. In addition to rebuilding, we got 40,000 bridges that need to be rebuilt. 40% of the national highway system has to be rebuilt, not just resurfaced, and a massive backlog on bringing transit up to a state of good repair. It's a lot of money, but it's also a lot of jobs. And the bill will also include partnering with communities that need help with wastewater systems. It's going to include broadband, which will have a big impact on rural and small town America across the country.
Now, we've obviously seen an increased interest in hybrid vehicles and now electric vehicles as well. What kind of time frame is realistic with the idea of moving to having so many electric vehicles?
Well, GM says they're going to be all electric by 2035. I held a hearing on my committee a month ago on the business case for electrification, because the Republicans say they don't believe in climate change, even though they do know and believe in sea level rise and severe weather events and want to build resilient. So I said, okay, you don't have to believe. Here's the business case. GM is going to build all electric. Where are we going to charge him? And then I had Fred Smith from FedEx testify. He's going all electric by 2035, including his semis. He's on a very, in fact, I think he's going to do it even quicker than that. He's on a very quick timeline, but he says, hey, there's no place to charge right now.
Yeah, and that's one of the questions, of course, in Roseburg. I think there are about five, six places right now. The other issue that folks and oftentimes critics have brought up is, what do you do when you're in an area, maybe during a storm, and you've got widespread power failures?
Well, there's also coming out of the Energy and Commerce Committee, in order to be able to have this charging network, we are going to rebuild substantial portions of the grid and rebuild them much more resilient so you don't have those kind of outages. I can't remember. There's many, many billions of dollars coming out of the Energy and Commerce Committee to strengthen and expand the grid so we can wheel renewable power around the country. So we're going to prevent things like happened up in the Portland, Salem area this last year during the winter, or down in Springfield where I live, and Eugene a couple of years ago, or in Texas a couple of months ago. So, the grid is another part of our decrepit infrastructure that needs to be rebuilt.
And with the move of many, this direction of the electric-powered vehicles, you're still going to have a lot of existing gasoline vehicles around for a long time. How do you transition all this?
Well, they're compatible on the road. I mean, it's not like if you're mixing up autonomous vehicles and driver, vehicles. That's going to be a tougher transition when and if we ever get to completely driverless vehicles. But I don't see a problem with the transition. I assume some gas stations will want to install chargers. Also, obviously, I mean, up and down I-5, there are restaurants who have chargers to try and attract people. Truck stops have approached me. They want to be involved in installing chargers. So I don't see there's going to be big problems with transition. One of the biggest problems with electric vehicles for individuals is the cost. So we're going to have to, as more produced, the price will come down. And then we also, Oregon and the feds provide, a tax credit for electric vehicles. But we've got to make them competitive. And if you make them competitive at the point of purchase, they're way competitive over their operating lifetime because it's so much cheaper to operate an electric vehicle. You're not buying the gas or diesel, and there's way, way less maintenance on these things.
I was looking over some of the information out there today, and my understanding is that even groups like the civil engineers are really pushing for an infrastructure upgrade and saying if we don't do that, it's going to cost our economy a lot of money.
Yeah, no. I mean, we have bridges that are failing. We have detours, you got puddles, you got congestion. I think we moved up to a C- on our infrastructure. We used to be A. We used to be the envy of the world in the 60s and 70s when we built out the interstate system and into the 80s. Now we're like number 15 in the world in terms of infrastructure, and we aren't investing in it. We need to invest. It's going to create. The estimates are if we pass the jobs package, there'll be 2 million additional jobs created, good paying jobs, because federal requirements will require Davis-Bacon wages, prevailing wages. A lot of them will be union jobs. And they're not all just in construction. They're in design. They're in engineering. There'll be small business suppliers will be profiting from this, too. So it'll have a huge impact on the whole economy, and then we'll be able to move people and freight more efficiently and be more competitive in the world. But if we don't do it, we're going to continue to see bridges and things fall down. Also, I was on a call today with a bunch of legislators, including, the representative from Roseburg, and state legislators to talk about wastewater and the needs for water and wastewater investment in Oregon. And that they've come up with, a huge number. And right now the federal government isn't partnering. So part of my bill is to get the federal government back into partnering with communities on water and wastewater systems. When I was a county commissioner, we got 75% federal money to build our system. Today you'd get zero. That's not acceptable. So I intend to, restore that program with an authorization for the first time since 1988. There were a lot of people, and these were a lot of rural representatives, a number of them Republicans, and they were like, yeah, we need this. We need this help. So they have Brian Clem from Salem has put together a list that I can't remember what it totals for water, wastewater, and broadband needs in the state. But the state also has, because of the rescue plan, an extra $1.3 billion to spend. And the state should be spending some of that money on these infrastructure needs in our rural communities. I mean, if DEQ has a community under a mandate for a new sewer system that they can't afford, then take some of that $1.3 billion and help them out. But that's up to the state legislature and the governor. I don't get a say there, but I'm working on the national side.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. In district this week, Congressman Peter DeFazio, the interview podcast after 1 at 541radio.com. Back in a moment on Inside Douglas County, 1246 News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, News Radio 1240, KQEN. Lars Larson coming up at 1. On tomorrow's program, find out about a group who's going to be coaching local youth and mountain biking when school gets out. Evan Cruz and Yaku Coetzee will be with us on Inside Douglas County tomorrow. On with Congressman Peter DeFazio. A couple hours ago, spent some time driving an electric Volvo truck up in Coburn. We're talking about transportation and infrastructure and also, of course, the current American Jobs Plan bill. Now, as transportation chair, Congressman, talk about your role in the transportation and infrastructure parts of this bill.
Well, the largest single portion of the jobs plan is the investment in infrastructure, roads, bridges, highways, transit, wastewater, and airports, and then drinking water and broadband and renewable energy from the Energy and Commerce Committee. We partner on those things. So I will be moving the bill through my committee the end of this month, and we hope to be on the floor before the 4th of July and begin negotiations with the Senate in the hope of getting the bill done by the deadline of October 1st when the current bill expires. And then we will see the jobs next construction season. You would see contracts let over the winter and a lot of activity start next summer and spring.
What about infrastructure projects in the 4th Congressional District? What could this legislation lead to?
Well, I was out in Oakland. They have a bridge there. They had to reduce it to a single lane. And with federal assistance, they're getting to replace that bridge finally. It won't be a single lane bridge anymore. They've got one other big project, but they've got dozens of other weight limited and restricted bridges around the county. And my bill is going to have a significant bridge title, and it's also going to pay attention to rural America, which often gets neglected in national legislation. So there will be programs both to help Douglas County and my other counties deal with their off-system bridges. We're going to get more money, hopefully, into the Forest Roads program. And then there's even there'll be money targeted again to smaller cities and communities for transit, which could benefit Douglas County also. So it could make a big difference in addition to the jobs it'll provide.
As this legislation's been looked at, you've had some critics talk about things being lumped in as infrastructure that some people say aren't. Address that.
Well, the president included, what I would call some human infrastructure relating to seniors and child care. That's not my committee's jurisdiction. He says it's a critical part of the package because there's a lot of single parents out there, and without adequate child care, we're going to need a bigger workforce when we pass this bill. And we want to give women as well as men or single parents opportunities to participate in these jobs. So he has included that as part of the package. It's not what you traditionally think of as bricks and mortar. I do the bricks and mortar. That's I think that would be the Education and Labor Committee, or I'm not sure which committee handles that.
Let's talk about some other topics in our time left. How do you feel like the federal government's doing with the vaccination rollout right now?
Nationally, I think they've obviously upped their game. I mean, they've beat their objectives substantially. in terms of, you know, 100 million doses. But it's been spotty. Oregon has kind of had some fits and starts here. And I don't know exactly what to attribute it to. I mean, at this point now, they're saying they're going to reallocate vaccines from states that do not have more demand. And that should mean Oregon will get more vaccines. Right now, you know, they've made everybody eligible who is legally eligible for the, you know, they still can't do legally do teenagers yet, but that's coming in the near future. But any adult now, American, is eligible for a vaccine. And, you know, I was in Walgreens in Springfield, Thurston the other day, and there were about six or seven people there waiting to get their shots. So, you know, I think Oregonians are still lining up to get their shots. I've had it. It feels really good. I mean, I ride on airplanes. I got to work and, you know, with a lot of people, and it just feels good to be protected from this virus. And the sooner we get more people vaccinated, the sooner we can totally go back to normal. I was also pleased to see, I last week contacted the governor and said, you know, I don't think you need to be closing down the restaurants. You know, all the federal statistics say, you know, 25% is safe, even if we don't have everybody vaccinated or wearing masks. And so she is rolling back to that point, which is going to be good. Plus, the rescue package has grants for restaurants. It's not a loan, it's grants. So anybody out there who's got a restaurant who's listening, who's having hard times paying their staff, paying their rent, anything else, they should contact the local Small Business Development Corporation there and get in line to get a grant to help tide you through.
Talk about the economic impact payments and how you feel like that's going.
Well, you know, most of the checks have been issued, the individual checks, the one-time checks, the checks for people with dependent children. It's a new system. The IRS has like, you know, K-Pro computers from the 1970s or something. So it's taken them a while to gear up. They need new computers. It's pathetic that we haven't, you know, allowed them to buy new computers for more than 20 years. You know, they are being tasked with putting out these payments. You know, hopefully, you know, they're saying, I think by the 1st of July, they will start making the payments to parents with dependent children.
For the impact on the federal budget deficit, what are your thoughts about all the spending and all the proposed spending that's out there right now?
Well, you know, we were in a crisis. You know, we did several bills last year to just sort of limp along. This rescue package is aimed more at really moving the economy more quickly. And the jobs package is investment. And I would put that in a different category. You know, if government was a business, they would have a capital budget and an operating budget. The capital budget would be building roads, bridges, highways, rebuilding roads, bridges, highways, investing in transit, investing in wastewater and other things. You wouldn't consider that as an operating expense. It's investment in the future of the country and the health of the American people and our competitiveness in the world economy. So I don't begrudge a penny that is going to go into our infrastructure that's going to make this country more competitive and, you know, a better place to live.
Just about out of time, as things start to open back up a bit, this summer, is there any potential for socially distanced outdoor meetings with residents in the district?
Yeah, I don't know, Kyle. We're, you know, I'd love to get back. You know, I used to do rounds of town halls every year in August and sometimes in the spring, too. Obviously, last year we couldn't do it. We did some teletown halls. They're not the same. We just have to see what the restrictions are when we get to the summer season in terms of large gathering.
All right, Congressman Peter DeFazio, thanks for joining us today.
Okay, thanks, Kyle.
12:57 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.